The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. The Cold Slither, you'll be joining us
soon. Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Hold your insulting tongue and mark my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really hired, Mr. Stark?
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles.
Yay!
I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G. Tonight I'm joined by the man that helps run the PopCultureNetwork.com website, at PCN underscore dirt on Twitter.
Yay!
Once again, my bottom third is not working.
Oh.
I guess I should just be used to it, just not being there.
If it were working, it would have a link to his website, popculturenetwork.com.
Yeah.
And the man that provides those dings and other sound effects you hear throughout the show is at agent underscore 70 on Twitter.
What's up, everybody?
And we also have at Roddy Cat on Twitter and at News Nerds Need.
What's up? There may be a new comic book shop opening up near me, and I'm excited. I'm going to go check it out, and I'll let you know. Yes.
Nice.
Or that's already open, I should say.
Do you know the name?
I think it's called Apocalypse Comics 2, but I'm not entirely sure.
Not sure what happened to the one.
I do know what happened to the one. There's another one. Well, the person that told me about it said it was in another state, but apparently there's one in Myrtle Beach, which is not too far. So it could be a part of that.
Okay. So make sure to go to our website, theclicknation.com. You can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and Comic Book Reviews. Follow the Twitter account at CBCron. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/theclicknation. Add us on Google Plus. Go to google.com/theclicknation. Add us to your circles. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and youtube.com/theclicknation. Help us move up the various podcast sites. Give us thumbs up. 5-star reviews. Help reshare the shows. We greatly appreciate it. Use the hashtag Comic Book Chronicles on your favorite social media websites or hashtag CBCron. We are a part of the Cold Slither Podcasting Network. Go to their website, cspn.us, and check out their shop for the CSPN at redbubble.com/people/CSPN/shop. Get a nice cut that you can see on Ready Cat screen.
That's awesome, man.
All right. Let's see. What do we have in store for news this week in the cinematic news? There's various updates on Daredevil, updated costume, Luke Cage reportedly is casting Alfred Woodard, female actress.
Yeah, Alfred Woodard is supposed to be a villain, a villainess, right?
Right.
That's the word.
Interesting.
Now I'm skipping a bunch of stuff.
You should read this stuff in advance, you know.
What good would that do? Let's see, the new animated show Vixen debuted on the CW Seed app and their website CW Seed. It's a less than 5-minute episode.
Boo.
Okay.
Yeah, that kind of sucked.
How was it, though?
Did you watch it? The animation was great. I mean, there's not much you can really take from a quick, less than 5-minute episode. You see her, I guess, running from Arrow and Flash while they're chasing her. So you basically get to see her powers on display, and then we flash back 3 days prior where, I guess, her foster dad is bailing her out of jail, and they're kind of going over some of her backstory, and then they get confronted by some muggers on the street, and then episode ends. Tune in next week. Okay. So every Tuesday, sometime early Tuesday, the episodes go up online. Hopefully it'll lead to maybe a live appearance on one of the CW shows, or perhaps a solo series of her own.
or perhaps Young Justice being on CWC from a potential tweet or two that I saw.
Okay.
That actually would be cool.
Yeah, it was, I think Black Girl Nerds on Twitter was asking CWC, you know, what's the chance of Young Justice being put on there also? And whoever was running the count was like, well, you know, it could happen if Vixen blows up, basically.
Yeah.
But that was before we found out. It was for like 5-minute episodes, so.
So there's potential. There's potential. Not holding my breath.
Mm-hmm. No, right. It's something.
Speaking of Arrow, the star of the show, Stephen Amell, defeated Stardust in a tag team match at WWE SummerSlam event this past weekend.
Did you watch that, Tim?
I did.
How did it look?
I'm sure Dirt did too, right?
Yep.
How did it look? Did it look like
a fine
professional? Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely overplayed the fact that he's not a professional wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they made it so he looked competent, but he didn't look overconfident.
Okay.
And he did some big moves. I mean, obviously, you can tell he'd been training. He did springboard stuff where he would jump on the top rope and then jump off onto somebody.
Oh, wow.
But all of the big stuff he did was safe. I mean, a lot of it was flashy, showy type stuff, but, I mean, you could tell that none of it was in any way risking, you know, his physical body in any way.
Right.
But, I mean, he looked fine. I mean, he looked good. There have been a couple guys, you know, a couple celebrities who have been on there, like Jeremy Piven, when he was on, did a big leap off the top rope, looked good. You know, he did it too. You could just tell that he's kind of naturally gifted for that athletic stuff. And overall, I think it came across pretty well.
Cool.
Yeah. I was listening to a wrestling podcast this week, and they made a good point. Just, you know, we see Stephen Amell on Arrow with his shirt off all the time, and he's pretty, you know, in shape guy, but then seeing him in the ring with his shirt off next to the wrestlers, like, you know, he's buff for a regular person, but compared to the on who knows what type of enhancements,
right,
wrestlers, especially like,
yeah, he's not name? A bodybuilder guy. Like a lot of those guys are bodybuilder gym rat guys, you know, who, I mean, they literally do work out 6 times a day.
Like his tag team partner, Neville, who he's taller than, but Neville looks like he's chiseled out of granite.
Mm.
Right. Yeah, and I thought for sure he was going to wrestle with the shirt on.
I did too.
But nope, took it off, and he was pretty pasty too. He didn't have any skin or anything. I thought he at least like
sun, apparently.
You have to think of it from the wrestling point of view. Like, we're used to these guys coming out, you know, shaven chest. Some people have hair, most of them don't, and they have, like, they're oiled down and glistening.
Oh, because they're tanning, too, like, before they go into the... So he's more, what's that guy's name? The Irish... No, Scottish guy? Irish guy?
Oh, Seamus.
Seamus! Yeah, he's much more Seamus. Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's more on that shade, even though he's not that bad.
Okay.
Seamus is more like a bar of ivory soap. and your average wrestler is I don't know, kind of like a... I don't know, Reese's Peanut Butter Cup,
right.
I guess, with as dark as they tan.
Leather chair.
He's more in the middle. He's kind of in the middle there. So
I got you.
There was a picture of, or I think it was a gif of Seamus with Beaker from the Muppets, and he was kind of just like stroking Beaker's hair, and it was like perfect because they both had the same kind of hair.
Beep.
So they looked like cousins.
Oh my god!
Yeah, that was back when the Muppet movie came out
last
year or whatever. Yeah,
that's funny. All right.
But no, yes. he did fine. I mean, as far as celebrities who get in the ring and do something, it was funny because they actually played up the fact that he was not a wrestler, so when he took a hit, he would actually fall over, and he would kind of pull himself over to the corner and try to catch his breath and that kind of stuff, as opposed to playing it like a wrestler where you get hit and you pop back up and punch the other guy back. He actually played it off like it was doing damage to him, you know.
Gotcha. All right. Well, he's an actor after all, so he's acting.
The Flash Season 2 cast Jesse Quick and Firestorm villain Tokamak.
Wait, that's a real name? Seriously? Dirt, you gotta help me on this one. I didn't Google it. Tokamak?
Sure,
I never. A real Firestorm villain?
I've never heard of the person. Of course, I'm not a big Firestorm fan anyway.
I mean, I must have missed that issue of Who's Who in the DC, you know, DC Who's Who. But who the hell named that villain?
The same guy who named the villain Guardians of Nowhere. Who is that guy?
Oh, that's right.
Yo, whatever. Yeah, Yonette, whatever.
Yo-Tat.
Yeah.
Yo-Tat. Oh, God.
Oh, yeah, we do have Guardians of News. Did you add that?
Okay. Yeah, I did. I was thinking it was Tayamak from Last
Dragon.
Last Dragon.
Oh, no. He's got to be in there. got the glow. He's got that glow.
So that would have been great.
Oh, no.
Linda Park will be returning for season 2 of The Flash.
Woohoo! Okay.
Take this as a rumor, but George Miller is to direct the Man of Steel sequel, and it's also rumored to be on permanent hold, apparently.
So, good job, George Miller!
Nathan Fillion wants to play DC Comics hero Booster Gold.
That kind of fits.
Suicide Squad wraps filming in Toronto. Agent May possibly leaving S.H.I.E.L.D.
Boo! Come on, people! There's one Asian American woman on TV in a heroic role.
She will still be on the show, just not in S.H.I.E.L.D.
Matthew Willig joins Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as Lash, one of the Inhumans introduced during the Inhuman book. Leah Sado gets Gambit lead role.
Who?
Lee or Leah Sado?
Sado? Did you skip all bunch?
I skipped a couple.
Wait, Guardians of the Galaxy clip shows Drax's softer side. Vin Diesel confirmed a return for Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Big surprise.
Chip Redley.
I was about to say, did you skip this just because of his name? Poor guy. Chip Redley at Geo 4.
That was part of it. Where'd it go? I mean, what did he talk about?
I was just like, why did he not mention that one?
Long story short, he's going to play Baron Mordo.
Nice. Yeah. As long as he's not Wong, stop flipping.
And since we're here, this was also breaking earlier. Was it Mads Mikkelsen from Hannibal is in talks to play Venom's role in Doctor Strange?
Yeah, you remember this guy? He was the guy that was crying blood in Casino Royale. You the poker player?
That's
him.
Oh yeah, that's where I know him from.
That's him.
Yeah, I've seen him in other stuff, but I totally forgot about that one.
Actually, if you got the new Fangoria this week, that's him on the cover from Hannibal, from the Nightmare sequences.
Oh, okay.
So, I'm guessing Dormammu. I can't imagine who else would. What other?
If Mordo's been cast. If Mordo's been cast, you know what other villainous role is recognizable in the Doctor Strange universe?
There's a rumor that Marvel is planning a new Blade movie about Blade's daughter. That took off like wildfire the other day.
Yeah.
Captain America, Civil War wraps principal photography. Another rumor that Civil War may introduce another Spider-Man character.
And another rumor about who Spider-Man was supposed to be fighting in Civil War, but I didn't put that in there.
Right. And they also dropped, did you see these teaser, like art
pieces.
Exactly, like that kind of let you know who's on whose side in Civil War. Okay, I don't want to spoil too much.
Yeah, that's why I didn't put it in there.
Mm-hmm. Art's nice, though. Yeah. X-Men Apocalypse Rats production. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Go down to the cinematic news, or the actual comic news, I mean. Marvel announced an all-new Inhumans series starring Crystal of the Inhumans as the lead character. Wake up, Doug.
What? No.
Stefano Caselli. James Asman's making his Marvel return co-writing.
Crystal coming back into the fold.
Yeah, nice to see Crystal coming back.
I can't care. I don't know. It's just, it's so impossible.
Is it a human?
What, is it a human or a crystal?
I don't know. Both?
All right. Moving on.
Possible new talent at Marvel Comics, Ashley A. Woods.
Yeah, who's doing the above Amanda Stenberg's comic Niobe, She Is Life, and I guess they must have caught her from that, and they've had her on for something.
Wait, Ashley Wood, the same one from IDW?
No. This is a woman.
Yeah, this is Woods.
Okay.
Yeah.
Woods, okay.
Yeah, that's why I initially thought the same thing, Dirk, but then I realized it was a separate person.
Which Blade celebrates milestone anniversary? Grant and Glossy revived the Rook for time-traveling adventure. Luchadors in space, really high above the Rook.
Wonder why that was put in there.
That's got to be high on Dirt's list.
I ain't skip it.
It's already my click of the week.
Gene Yang's Avatar series, Smoke and Shadow to Explore Fire Lord, Zuko's Legacy. Okay. I think I'm going to try to actually read that series because I like at least what Gene Yang is doing on... That's the Superman writer, right?
I believe so.
And then yeah. I believe the artist on that did the Danny Rand and Misty Knight, art for that Secret Love book, which I finally got to over the weekend. Miss Marvel wins Hugo Award mid controversy. Apparently, there was a bunch of controversy that I didn't pay attention to with the Hugo Awards.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a mess, but yeah.
Lois Lane, Double Down, second young adult novel announced. Who's working on that?
Gwenda Bond.
New stories by John Kesty, Paul Pope, Enki Bilal, Taiyo Matsumoto, and more from Humanoids. Pat's Prime 25th. I actually got through them.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah, it was fine.
Pat's Prime 2015, Dark Horse delivers Mirror's Edge and Halo exclusives, and Marvel announces Guardians of Infinity.
Oh, come on.
No, I think I'm doing it for this person. Yeah, I read that. I was like, I don't care.
That's oh, so did you fun. Put the news about Civil War number 9?
Secret Wars number 9?
Yeah, that's what I meant. Secret Wars number 9.
Oh, no, I didn't. I had that somewhere. I totally forgot. No.
So, Secret Wars gets extended by a month and an issue to number 9 to fully wrap up everything.
Wow. Yeah, number 9 currently slated for a December release.
Jeez.
Think about that.
There'll be 3 months into the all-new, all-different Marvel by the time that comes out.
Yeah, it's going to be like a postscript type thing, probably.
But I guess if it's depends on when in December, I guess. It could be like 2.5 months.
The cover they showed is Reed Richards fighting Dr. Doom.
Okay, not a
Did
postscript.
Did you hear that noise, or was that just me?
No, it's a motorcycle.
It wasn't just you.
Yeah. It's a motorcycle outside my window.
Right outside your window.
I mean, yeah, it's New York City for you.
So it was the same cover as 8, right? So they stuck a 9 on there, I think.
So somewhere they expanded the story, and it's gonna go long. I mean,
by the same creative,
freaking Hickman, you know, putting in more mumbo jumbo.
More mumbo jumbo. Yeah, it doesn't really affect anything.
Well, it's gonna throw back the publishing of a lot of books.
The scheduling, exactly. Like you're going to the After Effects probably before you see the end of the series.
Iron Man 1 has to come out because they've already done all the launch party PR for it. So, I mean, that's a date that's locked in. They cannot change that date. But it very well could be 6 to 8 weeks before they let number 2 come out, just because of everything else being pushed back.
I wonder if things will actually be pushed back. At least from the press release, they said it made it seem like things would go as normal, but that can always change, I guess.
Well, they already pushed a bunch of stuff back, you know, because they've been having publishing issues with all the different stuff, you know, falling behind. So things are already, you know, pushed back farther than they should have been. Number 4 came out on the day that number 5 was supposed to have come out, you know, and things are even pushed back even further beyond that. So, I mean, who knows with a lot of this stuff?
Yeah. So, okay, so I just put the link of the article in the doc, and apparently, according to this, it says that don't worry about the all new being delayed because it will launch in October with the release of Invincible Iron Man. What else does it say? I think that's about it, roughly. So I guess they're gonna go ahead. They basically seem like they're just gonna go ahead with all new and let this ride on out. I mean, because it's not like because they've been doing Last Days in the midst of Secret Wars. Hawkeye came out like a whole almost year after later, so it's not like they kind of care.
You can't really.
I know, but I'm just saying.
Hawkeye's done. You got to print it. I mean, it's been so long. It's like whatever. Yeah. Get it out there.
Like it was done from. So,
feels like they held on to it for spite reasons.
I'm wondering, but that's what it felt like anyway. But the point of that was, it's not that they really care that stuff's blood bleeding into the other thing, so I think they're just going to keep moving along.
And variant corner news, Marvel reveals Deadpool number 1 candy variant. Alludes to a DC half-page ad, kind of poking fun at DC.
And did you see what the ordering numbers are on that? If you want the candy sketch variant, you can order one for every 4,999 copies of Deadpool number 1 you order.
Wow. Alrighty then. Get right on
that. I was reading that sketch.com article where they were talking to retailers about ordering for the all new, all different Marvel and the
issues. I read that too after I saw you tweet it.
Yeah, the issues people were having with it. pretty informational.
Yeah, and I mean, I agree with everything I saw in there. I mean, we just found out today that we are not getting any of the hip-hop variants for Invincible Iron Man number one, because we didn't order 160% of whatever book it was tied to. Old Man Logan number one, I think it was.
That sounds stupid.
Because Old Man Logan is a much bigger seller for us than anything Iron Man, really. Right. People cared much more about that story. So, I mean, we still ordered more than we would have because it is a number one and it is all new Marvel. And
it's the first book in all new Marvel, right.
But not 160% of that book in order to qualify. I mean, what we do, and especially one of the things it said in that article, and Tim, you should probably go ahead and retweet that link at some point. One of the things it said in that article is that they don't tell you what your numbers are. You have to go look them up, and that's 100%
right.
True.
Right, you mentioned that before.
So on a lot of those books, what we do is we just order whatever we're going to order, and then we go ahead and order numbers on those variants, and we either get them or they cancel. You know, I mean, it's just one of those things where it's not worth our time to sit and dig through invoices, pages and pages of invoices, and it's not even what you order; it's what you ordered by a certain date.
Right.
So the cutoff.
So if a book is coming out and you order, 10 copies, and then you're like, oh, a lot of people are asking about this. Okay, I'll get 20 copies. You may have only ordered 10 by that certain date, and that's all that counts towards, whatever percentage you have to get. So then you have to figure out, well, what did I order by what date? What was the cutoff? And it's just a huge nightmare. So, like I said, most of the time we just say, okay, well, here's what we're ordering, and of this variant, give us 2. Of this, give us 5. Of this, give us 3. And, either we get them or we don't. You just wait and see.
Lame.
There's like there's be a better process of doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to end up ordering like 500 just to get 500 copies of a issue just to get a couple of variants.
Well, and that's how it used to be on all the variants, was that they were 1 in 5, a 1 in 10, a 1 in 15, mm-hmm. a 1 in 25, a 1 in 50, whatever. And then some of the smaller stores said, well, we never order 50. We're never going to get the 1 in 50. So then they started doing it by the percentages instead of the straight numbers. And sometimes they do both. Sometimes you'll have a book that has a 1 in 10, a 1 in 20, a 1 in 30, but then it also has variants if you order 125% of your numbers on this book and 180% of your numbers on this book. And so, like I said, we just gave up. It's not worth it to try to track everything down for variants. If people ask for them and we get them, then great. But if people ask for them and we don't get them, sorry. Order them online. But, it's just so much of a hassle just to try to figure out what you have to order on one book. And like I said, that's even just for the ability to order it.
Right.
And then you have to figure out, what do you order of this variant? How many people are going to want this variant? And plus, you're ordering all these other copies of the book, so you have to sell these copies above and beyond what you're normally selling.
Yeah. What's the hip-hop variant for Invincible Iron Man? Is that the DMX cover?
I think it's the 50 Cent.
It's the 50 Cent. Cover. That's what it is.
Anything else in Variant Corner? Reproducing Metroplex for Transformers. What's that about?
Hello,
what's that? Ready? I totally forgot about it because I did this a while ago. That was a cover that is going to be on there's an exclusive cover that's going to be available at TFCon in Charlotte, America's largest fan-run Transformers-related convention soon from Acme Comics, basically.
Okay.
Which is in Greensboro, and I think there was some basically talking about the back of Metroplex's box and the art that was on there. They're trying to recreate that. So if you have, I wouldn't be surprised if you had that somewhere in there, the back of the box with the
I don't think I have an original box sitting around, but
yeah,
wow, that is like really nice looking though. I just that article.
Yeah.
And I was not fortunate enough to have Metroplex growing up.
Neither did I.
But had I been able to at least see the back of this box, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I kind of want to go to this convention now, but that's probably not going to happen.
I just tweeted out the sketched survey article, called hashtag Comic Book Chronicles, you'll see it.
Cool.
All right, time to read some audible.com.
All right.
For you, the listeners of the Comic Book Chronicles podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. You can choose from Yes Please by Amy Poehler, The Best in the World at What I Have No Idea by Chris Jericho, Wrestling for My Life, The Legend, Reality, and the Fate of a WWE Superstar by Shawn Michaels, and Ready Player One by Ernest Cline. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/comicbookchronicles. Again, that's audibletrial.com/comicbookchronicles for your free audiobook.
Do it today.
Do it today.
Just do it. Alrighty.
Time to review some books.
Aw, do we got to?
Just plenty out this week.
Let's see what everyone read. I like the diversity around here. Got some all different kinds of publishers.
Oh, yeah, I didn't get to Ant-Man.
It was good.
Let's hear about Ant-Man Last Days then.
All right, so this is a book that details, you know, as in the header says, for a lot of these Marvel books that aren't directly or weren't directly tied into the lead up to Secret Wars, we're dealing with their literal last days on Earth before the final incursion. So what we have is a story about Ant-Man, and who we find out is the main, pretty much the only investor in Ant-Man Security Solutions. And
that's
there's
the old lady.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And this old lady has a secret behind her, and I don't want to spoil it because there is a ton of great story that's told once the secret is revealed. So I don't want to spoil the entire book. I just have to say that this was a very touching story. It's well written, and it also does a great job of you know, just telling a good kind of wrap up to what Scott Lang would be doing before the end of the world. And at the very end of it, we also find out how we lead into that teaser image that we got for the Astonishing Ant-Man number one that's going to come post-Secret Wars. So we do get some explanation as to how we get from the point where we sort of find Scott Lang just before this issue, and then we have that image, and we get from A to B in this book. So it's pretty good, you know, it's a pretty good read. You know, it's a sleeper candidate for Click of the Week for me because it was that, you know, it was just a fun read. Like, I don't want to spoil too much because, you know, it sort of takes away some of the wonder you might have when you read it. So, you know, take a look. It's a good book this week.
I kind of love how Nick Spencer and Dennis Hopeless have been throwing in D-list villains.
Absolutely.
Ones you never really ever thought about in a while. It's like, oh, huh, this one shows up. That's interesting.
Sure. I mean, is
Pacepot Pete in there?
No, not this week. Well. Not this week. But there's a couple. No, listen, there's a couple of D-list or even E or F-list supervillains. I was joking earlier about, digging through the DC Who's Who to find out whoever the hell that Firestorm villain was. I definitely recall seeing a lot of these villains in the official handbook of the Marvel Universe growing up. You know, I remember seeing these characters. I'm like, oh, okay. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's good. I definitely recommend reading this book. You don't have to be all that familiar with Ant-Man. Obviously, you know, he's got a lot more, you know, we all have a little bit more familiarity with the character post the Ant-Man movie and post having read a lot of the issues in the series. So, you know, it should come as no surprise that, you know, Spencer's done a good job in kind of telling a nice little, you know, this is like a nice, I don't want to say a bookend, but it's a nice little end of a chapter. We'll put it that way.
Cool.
Well, let me go ahead and throw this one out of here since we mentioned D-listers. Spider-Woman number 10.
How was that?
It was a
D-lister?
No.
No, but the villains in here are. Villains are, right?
Yeah, Porcupine's been riding shotgun with her and Ben Urich across the country because she quit, you know, after she quit the Avengers and S.H.I.E.L.D. and everything. Well, this book picks up pretty much like Black Widow's did, starting off with that mission that they did at the in the last days, you know, going to pick up scientists and whatnot. And it starts off with her and Nat just talking and Jessica just being her usual self towards Natasha. And then it flips back to a couple of days prior when they were all still across country and Porcupine, well, they were all in some Texas town where apparently a group took over the town, basically. Mm-hmm. What we come to find out in this issue is that somebody's using that town as a kind of a guinea pig. There are gamma ray radiated cows. There are people who ate said meat from the cows who turn into meat zombies.
Oh, this is like the Skrull kill. Remember the Skrulls who were cows, and then people ate the Skrull, you know, the cow Skrulls, and
kind of like that.
Wow.
But yeah, but basically people are being mind controlled, and this is them dealing with that, you know, in flashback form. It was a pretty interesting read. It was as amusing as it has been the entire run. But yeah, that was pretty much all you could say about it. Like I said, just the whole fact that like I said, you got Porcupine becoming doing some heroic stuff and actually being the one saving the day in this this particular issue is something you'd never thought you'd ever see.
Okay. Porcupine's a baby daddy?
There is that too, actually, yeah.
Speculation?
No, that wasn't even speculation, because that came up in a few issues back, if I remember correctly. Or he was there where he was married to the woman, or baby daddy, either way, but yeah, that whole storyline was kind of interesting.
No, I mean Spider-Woman's baby daddy.
Oh, wait. Oh, that I don't know.
You can just imagine. That's funny. All right.
Let's see, Cyborg number 2.
Yes.
What you think? So I reviewed this on theclicknation.com. So we got a look at I like the beginning part of this where they sort of took a page out of the Aquaman book of sort of making fun of some of the jokes that can be made out of Cyborg. You know, how does he use the bathroom?
Yeah. You know,
does he eat? Does he sleep? Does he dream? So I liked how that was handled. They didn't spend too much time with all the, you know, the inner monologue inside Victor's head. One of the characters we saw introduced in the first issue, a handicapped individual, we saw some more developments with him, getting some upgrades through illegal channels.
Possibly becoming a potential villain for Vic.
I hadn't thought of that, but that makes sense.
Although that last page may can go one way or the other.
Right.
We saw... I like how the relationship with his dad. His dad his dad tolerates Cyborg as long as it's like for his own gain or mm-hmm. as like using him as like a science experiment. But like any regular father son interaction, he has no time for.
That's a classic characterization.
I'm getting a little tired of the way they're telegraphing that, though.
Like, yeah.
It's every time, it's like, I'm going to do something. And then my dad says something snide. And then I'm like, okay, Dad, I won't get in your way. And it's like, can we, you know, move on from this somehow or expand
but it's
this
only
somehow?
Issue number 2.
And I feel like that's going to end up not being an issue. Probably an issue or two.
Common history of Cyborg, though. I mean,
yeah, it is.
They talked about him in Justice League. They did a lot of that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is obviously an old story trope for for the character from way back too. So.
Yeah.
I'm also not too enthusiastic about the whole alien invasion, like all that stuff. Like it's fine, but I don't really feel like I'm invested in that alien war, whatever it is, the same way I am with Martian Manhunter.
The aliens in this are two. They're one dimensional, but they're kind of like have no dimension.
Well, I mean, what's funny is that, at least from my perspective, the alien invasion part, you know, it makes sense because of the nature of the cybernetics that Cyborg has right now, and it's a direct, you know, follow up to how he, you know, to the cybernetics that he currently possesses. So, you know, that part at least made sense to me. I can understand, okay, so this tech is from, you know, is otherworldly, it's from another planet. Right. So, you know, it provides an in from, you know, or at least a story mechanism to bring in outer space into the Cyborg book.
This is right. This our whole arc is basically saying, hey, look, we got Cyborg from there to here, and this is explaining that away, and then we'll go from there after this arc is over with, you know, or maybe expand on it. Who knows?
I don't know. Right. I was about to say the one interesting aspect of the story that I found, and I skimmed this. I didn't really want to type it in because I wasn't confident in being able to talk too much about it, but one aspect of the story is that there are civilians who are opting to get, you know, with enough money, opting to get cybernetic implants to try to, you know, make their lives better. And I thought that was a pretty interesting aspect to the story because, you know, classic Cyborg, pre-crisis Cyborg, obviously we're talking like early, mid-1980s, you know, everyone treated anyone with, you know, cybernetics or anything like that as a freak. And it's interesting to see here, 25, 30 plus years later, you know, people, you know, the one aspect of the story is that people want to get cybernetics because they want to be better. They want to be cooler or enhanced.
Well, in this case, though, and this may or may not be a spoiler, this is kind of in service to the story at hand and probably and is playing into that part of it.
Sure.
For a reason.
Absolutely.
You know, and you will find out. You kind of sort of find out the tie between the two, the alien invasion and this, because there is a direct link towards it.
Right.
That just so happens to be using that, but yes. Sorry. It was a pretty decent read. You find out that you know, Cyborg's friend, he was an old high school football rival, that they knew each other, and they kind of, you know, got back together, who kind of hipped him to what was going on since he was kind of out of the loop for a while.
Right.
You know, and also has ties to the other person who got cybernetics earlier in the issue, so I'm sure that's all going to come together quite soon.
I will say that circle's going to be closed up soon.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Business needs to pick up soon.
Yeah, I feel confident it probably will.
I like the art. I kind of agree with Tim. I wasn't all that. I didn't find myself invested in the story. You know, I did skim it after all. I couldn't bring myself to sit down and really read it, but I read enough to get the gist. So I can agree with Tim on this one. I do think they need to kind of get things moving on the book to make it a more of a, you know, closer to the top of the pile reading list.
Yeah, I think some books need a little time to cook. So just, you know, be patient. It'll get somewhere, I think. But I'm just saying, you know, sometimes, especially with a book like this, because you wouldn't, like, people have been wanting a Cyborg book for so long, but at the same time, Cyborg is a character that some would say works better in a group than on his own, but this is going to be the test of whether that's going to be the case or not. So you kind of have to give it a little bit.
All right, so let's stay in the DC neighborhood. Superman 43. Dirt read it. Rod, I don't think Roddy read it, but I know Tim read it, and I read it. So what do you guys think?
I thought it was fine.
I was kind of nonplussed by it.
Ringing endorsements all around.
Yeah, right. I was kind of disappointed at what caused the, you know, without spoiling too much, we find out here how Superman, well, let me ring the spoiler bell. We find out in this issue what events really caused the release of Superman's secret identity into the world, into the wild. As it may be.
I'm mad
and
that...
It felt like it was just like, oh, we got to get it out there. And so, boom, there it is. Okay, now let's move on beyond that. And it's like, no, this should be a huge, momentous event. Mm-hmm. And instead, it's just like, bing, there it is. Let's go.
And Lois kind of folded pretty quickly.
Yeah, I thought...
Superman's in trouble. Let me help by...
Let me save him. Yeah. I think they also used the whole like reduced power thing to kind of move that along as well.
I was thinking they were going to go the route of that Superman was going to ask her to put it out there.
Mm-hmm. But she's the one that made the call. And, you know, my only note that I typed in was, you know, it always seems like Lois thinks that she knows best. And how many times have we seen Superman stories where Lois thinks she knows best, but it turns out she doesn't. And this, I think, is one of those.
Well, but, and this kind of goes along with the way I felt after the last issue, where in 42, he's doing his supernova thing, and you see a random guy walk out of nowhere, mm-hmm. put his hand on him, oh, I'm absorbing all your energy, and then he's gone. You're like, what the hell was that? Like, what? Like, that's why he has reduced powers? That doesn't...
Exactly, and they only touch upon that ever so briefly in this issue.
It's like, those are the two biggest things to happen to Superman in, what, since he died, mm-hmm. Is that he got depowered and lost his secret identity, and both of those are just, like, I don't know.
Oh, no, we're forgetting blue and red. We're forgetting blue and red energy, Superman.
I'm
I think
trying
was,
to
that was pretty
blue
big.
And red.
That happened after he died.
But still.
Yeah.
And they just kind of breezed over him and moved on. So I don't know if that was an editorial mandate or if they just thought if Yang just thinks, you know, hey, I've got better stuff to do with the story, so I just want to get through this and get to the good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Or just he thought that was the best way to do it, in which case I disagree. Mm-hmm. So.
And we should mention that I guess there's a rumor out there that John Romita Jr. has left Superman for another project that he was offered, and Howard Porter is supposedly going to be, he's going to fill in at least one issue, but he may stay on to be the regular artist.
Really?
Which means someone else is going to have to do just League 3000.
And one.
Oh, right, 3001. I forgot, it's changed now. Oh.
I like his art, I like him on there, so, I mean, either way, I'll be reading a book that he'll be doing the art on. So.
Well, he did Justice League, yep. Actually, back awesome. In the day when Superman Blue was on the team.
Oh,
yep.
Did he?
Yep. I mean, he didn't start out as Superman Blue and Red. He started out as a hippie long-haired Superman.
Right.
In, but still, yeah. In the JLA. The book was actually JLA, not Justice League.
Oh, okay. But so, yeah, stay tuned for whatever that could turn out to be.
Nice.
Yeah, that was kind of disappointing.
Man, Logan number 4.
Did you? What was interesting about this book is that, you know, I mentioned that this is the book, and it's not the only book, but I guess it's the book where, you know, we have a character kind of moving from region to region in Battleworld, and you know we have. Old Man Logan start in one, you know, section of Battle World and end up in another at the end, and that's the cliffhanger. And, you know, in this issue we have his what seems to be an eternal struggle against the zombie horde in the Marvel Zombie World. And what's the name for it? Before I pull up the map.
Not Deadlands. Or is it Deadlands?
I think it is the Deadlands.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's, you know, he's fine, you know, and the one thing that preserves that preserves him is his healing factor, as diminished as it is, it's still keeping him going, you know, during the fight with the zombies. So, you know, he encounters another character who's been exiled to the Deadlands, but this character does, in fact, help Old Man Logan by enabling him to escape and getting him to another area of Battleworld. I think that, you know, at least for me, this issue is just kind of like, it's there. We move him from one area to another. It doesn't really do much for, you know, developing the character. I don't know what they're trying to do with this particular series. You know, we joke about the Bendis books being the ones that may have impact. And obviously we know that Old Man Logan's going to carry into all new, all different, but I'm not sure what the point of this series is at this point.
Matt Wang 97 on Twitter says, "Yawn, old man slogan."
Yeah, that's pretty much. I mean, that's pretty much in accordance with what I, you know, with what I was just talking about. It's just pretty. There's not much happening. I'm not sure what this series is supposed to mean, and you know what it's supposed to do for the character.
I enjoyed it a little more than you, just for the fact of it's like the grifter traveling from domain to domain, or being thrown from domain to domain.
Yeah, that's, right.
That part of it's kind of just unintentionally funny to me, that he just gets like dropped in all these different locales, and each issue is him like dealing in a different domain and then being jettisoned to another one. I was wondering if the individual that he encountered in the Deadlands was from another Secret Wars book, but apparently it didn't look like it because of the costume that person had on. As I talk around who it was.
Right. I thought it was a direct crossover with, I won't spoil too much, but I'll ring the bell, with A-Force?
Yeah, that's what I thought, but
I wasn't sure.
And so, basically, at the end of this issue, Old Man Logan ends up in a very curious domain of, I guess, another book that Bendis writes, for Secret Wars.
Well, I think, yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's you hit it right on the head. Hit it right on the head. And we'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
Well, alrighty then.
Yeah, like, you know, it sucks trying to be intentionally vague and still having to talk about something that you're not all overly enthusiastic about. You know? It stinks.
Yeah. Well, since we're on a Secret Wars train, somebody tell me about Secret Wars 3. I mean, Civil War 3.
That was the last book I read before the show. There's a nice little surprise ending, I guess, or reveal at the end. But I don't know. Civil War's been kind of, I guess I didn't like the first issue as much. I enjoyed the second one more. Third one kind of back in like the first issue mold again for me.
Mm.
Nothing really seems to be happening.
Well, you know what? Go ahead, Drew.
Well, I was just going to say, I call shenanigans on not seeing someone for 16 years and then seeing them in a different setting with a mohawk haircut walking in a crowd of people and going, oh, that's that person from 16 years ago. No.
Was it 16?
Okay.
Isn't that what they said it was?
Hold on. I'll check the reference.
I know Iron Man has gray hair, at least.
I don't know if it says 16. Hold on. It doesn't say 16 anywhere. But yeah, it says a while.
But still, it's like years later, and there's someone in a crowd with a completely different style of outfit, a completely different haircut, going, mohawk, and you just happen to spot that one person and see through the outfit, see through the settings, see through the haircut, and go, oh, obviously that's that person from way back when.
I mean, the face, someone's face is still their face, but I wanted to not dwell so much on that, but I wanted to get to where we had kind of left off from the second issue, where we have this group of... like a commando group from the blue, from Captain America side, invading the Iron Man side to try to get or do something, and we lose one member of that commando group, and we have Spider-Man kind of take over the action, and we find that what's happening, what they're trying to infiltrate and retrieve or stop is, kind of a weird, I wasn't 100% sure what the whole point of their mission was. It's like, what are they retrieving exactly? They don't really show. I mean, I guess it's in a box, but, it was just kind of vague. It's supposed to power their depowering device, that they're working on.
Oh, yeah.
Did I see Spider-Man with Falcon wings?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Peter Parker is like, this is older, wiser, tired of the bullshit, Peter Parker.
Okay.
And without saying who it was, I really enjoyed the villain that infiltration team had to face off against.
Oh, yeah, that was a nice little nugget.
Oh, yeah, I mean, exactly what happened to that villain and how that villain evolved was kind of gross. That was creepy.
Very elaborate.
That was the only note that I wrote down that part was.
Oh, and did they reference in issue 2 that... Hawkeye had the symbiote suit.
I don't know, but it was a surprise to me when I read this.
Yeah, I was like, oh, okay.
All right.
But, I mean, the suit jumps around, so I guess it makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, listen. Go ahead.
I was going to say, a lot of these Secret Wars books, and more I read, I'm just kind of like, eh.
Well, I think this one is well done. I like the story that this one is trying to tell. And obviously the Lionel Yu art is, is a good draw also. So, this one is one of the more quality, kind of independent stories within the Secret Wars framework.
I'm also curious if the interactions with Professor X are going to come back to lead to something, or if that's just there to throw him in the story. Like, it's hard to tell because of, and, again, trying to avoid spoilers, but because of what happens with that character, I can't tell if he's allowing something to happen and he's somehow going to make a reappearance as things play out.
Right.
Or if that's just being played to show you where he's at in his life and what he's going through. I can't tell if that's just a character moment for the sake of showing him off or if that's going to play out as something down the line.
Right.
Dun, dun, dun.
I'm interested to see. I'm still interested in reading issue 4.
Yeah, no, I'm on board still. I'm still on board.
Yeah, at this point I want to see how it's going to resolve it. So, what else?
Okay.
Anybody read Lando?
Yes.
Another solid issue.
Indeed. So here we are after the events of last issue. They've stolen what they now realize is Emperor Palpatine's prized possessed ships. They're on the run. They come across a couple of members of the Imperial Guard who quickly end up skewering Lobot, so they have to deal with that. And while the other crew, a couple of members of Lando's crew fight said Crimson Guard, who, by the way, I don't know if anybody's noticed this, but the two, the twins, as they call them, kind of look like they're from Wakanda.
they definitely do look like
Black Panthers. They look like Star Wars characters, put it that way.
Yeah, they do look like they're Black Panthers.
Yeah, don't fit anything else in the Star Wars universe.
Exactly, and that's what I was kind of wondering, because especially there's two panels in particular where they're looking at you, each other.
Right, and then they smile.
Yeah. And I'm sitting here like, wait a minute.
That dealer guy kind of interests me just because of his background knowledge of...
Oh, the Ugnat? Yeah, they're usually floating around. Oh, yeah, because he knows he's... Because what happens is once the guards get taken care of, which I almost thought that the guards actually ended up taking out the twins and took their clothes type of deal situation, but yeah. It doesn't seem like it was the situation. We don't know that yet because they kind of unmasked them and was like, yeah, I don't know what's going on with these guys, but yeah, we don't know.
I don't think that's what happened. They're actually the Imperial Guard. I have to Google that. I'm not as up on my Star Wars.
Right, or the Crimson Guard, whatever. Yeah, I could still call them that.
I didn't even think they're correct. That sounded right.
Well, no, I call them that. I know that's not the case. Well, I think I want to say that may actually be. I know they are the Imperial Guard, but there is some mention of that. But I've called them that anyway because I don't care.
Because they're red. Right. Because they're red. Exactly. That's why.
So, and apparently there is, Lando knows that there's women in the Imperial Guard somehow.
Well, no,
he's at a conquest of one.
Yeah, he bet.
I know. I just
thing that... The thing that stood out to me reading this is, I don't know if maybe this is just my lack of Star Wars knowledge, but I just assumed that after Palpatine, came out full evil and went full Sith Lord, that everybody just knew that that's who he was. But apparently it's not widely known that Emperor Palpatine is a Sith Lord, that he's... on the dark side of the Force. Apparently that's a secret to most of the Empire, which I was kind of surprised by.
Right.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised by that simply because he hid the fact that he was a Sith Lord that entire time. So, through episodes 1 through 3, you know what I mean? So, I'm not surprised at all that...
First of all, that's episodes 1 through 3. I mean, come on.
I know.
Oh, stop it.
That raises a question for me, dude. Which you just reminded me is like it's not like the Emperor or Palpatine makes any public appearances in episodes 4 through 6.
No, because at that point it's just like 20 years later he's already in power, and I mean for all intents and purposes people are thinking like, okay, this clearly the Emperor's just got, you know, he's gone mad with power or something like that and whatever. So the part about being a Sith probably wouldn't come up because of all the other stuff they're doing, you know?
Right.
And but you would just assume that there'd be rumors out there and speculation.
Yeah, but it's not like the Sith actually came out and themselves exterminated the Jedi. We saw what eventually happened to all the Jedi. They got exterminated by various Imperial forces. So it's not like it was all like Sith versus lightsaber duels, you know what I mean?
There's nobody around who's going to really talk about, hey, the Sith are still around, because only like 1 or 2 people that are still around at this point, and they're in hiding because they can't say anything because they're in hiding.
Yeah.
So who's gonna give up that kind of information? You know that wasn't already there.
I mean, hey, all the Jedi. It's every Jedi comes back as like the Canterbury Ghost and is wandering around somewhere in the Empire.
That can probably only be seen by other Jedi.
Man, I can't wait for the people. Star Wars movie to come out because we're just gonna be going back and forth.
Hey, we never even talked about the teaser thing.
I didn't watch it.
Oh yeah. I can't remember his name.
Ben.
Yeah, Finn gets a lightsaber, so clearly he's Force sensitive, which is cool. Which I don't feel like anybody. Well, they're
you
probably
don't know. You don't know that he could just have stumbled upon a box of antiques in the middle of a fight and pulled them out on somebody.
I don't think so. That's never worked that way in Star Wars. You know that.
How was his lightsaber retrieved in the first place? It got cut off at Cloud City, right?
Luke's?
Yeah, Luke's.
Oh, but it could have been someone else's. I mean,
it's just because it's the same color.
Everyone keeps saying it's Luke's.
Or whatever,
Anakin's lightsaber.
Well, yeah, technically it's Anakin's. But technically, I mean, it's not like wherever it fell to, unless it broke into a million pieces, which could have possibly happened, but I doubt it. Somebody could have found it at the bottom of the thing. It's not like it fell out of Cloud City.
Well, we do know from the latest issue of Star Wars that people do know about lightsabers, and they do come across them from time to time, and they are valuable, so there are people collecting them.
Legends at this point.
Yeah, it's possible that in some sort of, working against the Empire, infiltrating some sort of secret bunker or something, they find a wall of Jedi weapons and training stuff behind the glass case. He's got to smash it and take one out in order to fight somebody, and that's when a real, like Luke Skywalker or someone appears, like, give me that. and, you know, starts kicking everybody's ass with it.
Right. And, so, you know, like I said, we got this Ignite, the guy on Lando's crew that knows about it. Surely there are other people in the world that actually, you know, has
But they don't know the properties of this sword.
Well, apparently, but...
So.
You know, all the whispers and rumors be that what they are. But in this case, look, we have Palpatine after... Yeah, exactly. We have Palpatine after Lando, who, by the way, the other guy that's after them, the bounty hunter...
What's the deal with that guy?
I don't know. Like, I don't know if he's anybody that's going to be of note, or just somebody they made up for the thing. All we do know in this issue, he gets a ship that's kind of presumably a Lando ship, and based off of Hunter Killer. It was a Hunter Killer.
Well, I mean, the point is...
Unlike the robots of the same designation.
Yeah, I was just going to say the whole point of that little interlude was to have the bounty hunter be given the capability of finding Lando relatively quickly. You know, we'll get to a confrontation at some point very soon.
Yeah, he's going to be Lando's Boba.
Yeah.
Or he'll just appear in the middle of a neutron star and be disintegrated.
Exactly. And we'll we'll wonder why this character was introduced in the first place.
That would be great. Actually, that's what that'll be my click of the week if that actually happens.
You better tweet that to Charles Soule. Just let him know.
He was like, all right, well, that got loosened. That tie got tightened up real quick.
That's funny. All right. Let's see. What else do we have to talk about?
Did you read S.H.I.E.L.D. Age 70?
Yeah, you did. Yes. And this is a surprise candidate for Click of the Week for me. I had a lot of fun reading this.
All
9,000 pages of this one?
Well, the last half of the book is like a reprint of the first appearance of S.H.I.E.L.D. I forget what book it is. Is it Journey into Mystery? Hold on. No, Strange Tales. Tales, issue 135. But, you know, the first part of this book, and I'm trying to scroll all the way to the beginning so that I can recount what happens here. But basically, one of the cool things about the Siege book in Secret Wars is that it integrates a lot of the various iterations of S.H.I.E.L.D. And what we have here in this issue is an integration of the S.H.I.E.L.D. we know from the television show, the S.H.I.E.L.D. we know from the Marvel comic books proper, the 616, and the S.H.I.E.L.D. that we know from the Hickman and Dustin Weaver limited series that still hasn't finished but is about to finish. So,
supposedly.
Right. Well, I mean, listen, Hickman's tweeted out that the art is done. It's just a matter of him putting in the script, you know?
Well, apparently that book got the same editor as Hawkeye.
Yes. So... but I'm looking forward to it. And what's cool about this issue is it integrates Coulson. Obviously, the whole point of this book is to integrate Coulson and his team into the Marvel Universe proper. But we also have, you know, like a real explanation or it's some explanation of the history of S.H.I.E.L.D. and how we've gotten to this point and where they've come from. And it's a lot of fun. And like I said, it integrates a lot of what is introduced in the Hickman and Weaver limited series. You know, Coulson gets a cool bunch of scenes in this. There's you know, still mysteries to be uncovered. The second story in this book is an introduction of the post-Secret Wars S.H.I.E.L.D. book, kind of a tie-in book. It's the Howling Commandos book, with you know, and explains how we get to where the LMD of Dum Dum Dugan is reintroduced into the Marvel Universe and why there's a team of supernatural S.H.I.E.L.D. agents running around. So that's actually a pretty good, you know, it's actually a pretty interesting story.
Is this the issue, like, Al Ewing wrote part of it?
Well, let's see. I believe Al Ewing wrote this this story. You know, it's like a second story in the book. Al Ewing wrote the Howling Commando story with Stefano Caselli on art. It's really nice. I was impressed at this. You know, like it read very well, and that's obviously due to Al Ewing. And I really wouldn't care much about the characters that, you know, these supernatural characters, but yeah, Al Ewing told a pretty good story, and Caselli's art, you know, it's always very, very good. So it definitely helped to sell the story. You know, I had a lot of fun reading this book. The lead story, like I said, you know, integrates the various versions of S.H.I.E.L.D. that we know, and you know, and in having Nick Fury Jr. Sam Jackson, Nick Fury, in here, it sort of integrates the Ultimate Universe too, even though, you know, we know that's not really the case. So, you know, it, it's just a lot of fun for a fan of S.H.I.E.L.D. So I like this book. It's a sleeper candidate for Click of the Week for me.
Okay. Heavy praise. I'm going to get to We Are Robin number 3.
I just missed out on reading this.
I really enjoyed this book. I wrote a review up on theclicknation.com and popculturenetwork.com.
Cool.
Actually, reading your review, Tim, I've realized that you are a horrible person that takes delight in dead robins.
Oh, no!
Needs to be some real-world consequences, Dirt. So, the premise of this issue is there are bombs planted around Gotham, I guess the train tracks, and the Robin crew is trying to defuse them, and they're using some of the Robin team at home on computers to Google how to defuse bombs, if you can believe that. And
are you serious?
And I guess the Nest, quote unquote, is giving them tips too, or whatever. Mm-hmm. But so they defuse some. There's one left. They're encouraged to leave the bomb where it is for some reason. One of them decides that no, they got it. They can do it. We see a big explosion. I'm assuming that person's dead. I'm just assuming that. And then in the epilogue, we get to see who is the person that was introduced in the first, I believe it's the first issue, might have been the second, the individual that might be secretly running the operation. Mm-hmm. Most people's guesses were correct.
Yeah, it is who we thought it was.
Batman makes an appearance here also, and they tease.
Mecha Robo Batman.
Yeah, Mecha Batman. There's a tease for Batgirl next issue, so the guest appearances will keep on coming. I like that it's there's a group of young teenagers. They don't know what they're doing, but they're trying to bandy together to make a difference. And like I said in my review, sometimes there's got to be consequences when you're not properly trained. So not everyone makes it out alive. Mm-hmm. And it has the best cover, some of the best cover work in comics.
Oh, that's Lee Bermejo. He's a talented artist. He's the writer on this book, but that's definitely a Bermejo cover.
Yes, he does good cover work.
The guy did a sketch for me once at a con, at a local con here in New York, and it was for free, and it was the simplest sketch, but he took so much time on it, so I definitely can see how, you know, he can do like some really elaborate, you know, kind of like one-off cover type work, you know, with a lot of great design touches, too.
I don't know. I may have to go back and read this then, but I read the first issue, and I just really didn't care. Like, I just got to the end of it, and nothing attracted me to it. Nothing grabbed me in the story. I just didn't feel like there was any reason to keep going. So, I don't know. Maybe I'll have to go back and give it a shot.
The second issue is a lot better. I'll say that. Because, yeah, the first issue, I was kind of like, you focus a lot. The first issue was kind of just because the focus was on Duke. And the second issue, you get all the rest of the Robins and them working together. So it made it a lot more interesting. Anything else?
All right. Friday, anything left on your list?
What were you going to say, Dirk?
I was just going to say there's my pick. Actually, you know what? I do want to talk about Deathstroke. I actually sat down over the past week and I read the entire series of Deathstroke leading to this. And don't ask me why. It was just kind of one of those random things. You know what? I'm going to read Deathstroke. And the key point of this series is that he's been rejuvenated. He's young again. He has two eyes. He no longer has gray hair. His kids don't recognize him because he's not much older than they are physically anymore. And he now wants to redeem certain aspects of his life. He feels bad about the way he, you know, turned his back on his kids a long time ago, and they need him. And his own father was trying to, absorb the powers from the grandkids, Jericho, because, you know, he's so powerful, and Ravager is out there. And this story, he's still an assassin for hire. He still gets missions from people to go take someone out, but he's starting to do the thing where he's only taking out the bad guys. There's kind of that Black Widow-esque bend to the story. And he's working alongside Wonder Woman, trying to kill this Titan who's threatening Paradise Island because Deathstroke kind of messed up and released a bad guy. Didn't kill him. He actually released him from a prison. And so trying to take him down, and Superman obviously has a relationship going on with Wonder Woman, so he can tell that there's something wrong on Paradise Island. He goes to investigate. The first thing he sees is Deathstroke, and so obviously you're going to jump to conclusions in the half second it takes you to fly from outer space to Paradise Island, and there's a throwdown that happens between them. And the key thing here is the weapon that Deathstroke is now using, because it's been given to him by the guy whose name I'm not even going to attempt to try. Makes all the weapons. Starts with an H.
Hephaestus.
Yes, there you go. And the weapon, one, it has a mind of its own. So it takes over part of Deathstroke's personality, and it wields itself through him. But second of all, it can change to be the weapon he needs. So it might be a staff, it might be a spear, it might be a sword, it might be two daggers. It's, you know, whatever it needs to be for the battle at hand. And so he's finding himself, one, he's in the position where he wants to redeem himself. Two, he's taking out bad guys who deserve to be taken out through his method, as he sees it. And three, he's starting to lose himself to this weapon he's been given to fight with. So there's some interesting dynamics going on with the character. It's completely different from the old series he had before, when New 52 relaunched. And I liked that series as well, up until the point Rob Liefeld came in and ruined it. But this is actually, you know, the first couple issues were a little rough. It jumped around a lot. It was trying to, I think, find its feet, really, and figure out where exactly they wanted him to go. But now that it's gotten to this point, it's actually been a lot of fun. And it has been, like, three issues and an annual, I think, of this giant battle on Paradise Island. So it's one of those things where it's not just, okay, everybody fight, and then the fight's over, who wins, who loses. The battle is the story. So as the people, you know, are moving around the island, fighting this part, fighting that part, trying to figure out this, trying to figure out that, you know, the battle that's being waged is an ongoing, that's the storyline that's happening. So it's been a lot more interesting than anything I expected. So I'm actually pretty happy with the series, and it's one that I plan to be sticking with as the months go by.
All right.
Not my click of the week, though, but okay. It's pretty good.
Interesting. Let's see. Ryan, you want to talk about Captain Marvel and the Carol Corps number 3?
Certainly. Sorry, was checking out some news record. So after the events of last issue, where one of the Banshee squad jumped the gun to test out the new rockets that they were trying to use, because they're trying to figure out what's going on in the world. Well, after she jumps the gun, does this, the plane blows up. She does not die. Miraculously being saved by Cap. But now this puts them on the run, because now everybody's alerted to what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So here we have the Banshee squad, you know, getting out of Dodge, as it were, and taking Rhodey with them and having a little chasing in, you know, in the midst of it, which ends up them on a place that Rhodey knows, finds out about, and him being told about what happened to his crew and them hashing that out, which really didn't take much, because, you know, wasn't their fault, wasn't his fault, and everybody's happy now. And then right. At the end of the story, the law comes in, which,
right.
You know, assume there's going to be a big battle.
Yeah.
And at next issue. It was a pretty good read, though, outside of that, because you see it was a good bit of action going on.
I was going to say, it's a nice bit of action in the story. Mm-hmm. I'm still not 100% sure where DeConnick hopes to end up, you know, with the story, where, you know, with these characters. Mm-hmm. I did like some of the Easter eggs that were put in by the, I guess, the art team, who they put on the crew of the Albatross. That was the name of the ship that that Rhodey was the captain of.
Right.
One of the characters, or one of the crewmen or crewwomen that was on that didn't make it was Bethany Cabe. We, you know, these are all familiar names for any fans of Iron Man.
Mm-hmm.
Clayton Force Wilson. He wore an armor that was called the Force Armor. Michael Collins. I think that's Deathlok, isn't it?
That's Deathlok. Yeah.
Right. And one of the other names is then they do a little bit of switcheroo. They have a crewman or crew women named Geraldine Conway after Jerry Conway, mm-hmm. Christine Claremont after Chris Claremont.
Yep.
And I can't make out the last name, but I thought that was pretty cute as a little Easter egg, you know, right before we get to the end of the book, where, you know, the law shows up, and the law on Battleworld is a group of Thors, so
a contingent, as they say.
Yes. So,
but yeah, this was an enjoyable book. And going back to what you were saying about where they're going to end up, I don't think that matters in a lot of these books anymore, because mm-hmm. like this one. I think there's probably some books specifically set up to say, okay, these stories are off there on their own. These ones over here will... You get some glimpses into the world because there are people are starting to pick up on what's going right. down, but they won't have any kind of definite resolution. They may or may not have any definite resolution as to what's going on in the main book. Mm-hmm. This might be one of those books. So this is probably going to get right. And I'm convinced because of, like, say, last week's Captain Britain and the Mighty Defenders book.
Right.
Because, like, there are certain books that are starting to end, and it's like, well, this happened, and it's in the world, and people know about things, but, yeah. It doesn't. It may or may not feed back into the overarching story.
Right.
It may. We don't know because something could come up in Secret Wars, but I kind of doubt it. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's what that extra book is for.
Right? Can you imagine? Number 9 ties up every one of the Secret Wars Battle World books. That'd be fun.
Yeah, like everybody who's caught wind of things are not right just kind of gets their moment in that book. Who knows? All right.
Okay.
But we'll see. But it's still an enjoyable read. Possible click of the week. Don't know.
Nice. Nice. All right. So are we in rapid fire?
We are.
All right. I think, did we cover all of your books, Tim? We did.
Except for Batgirl 43. We get an appearance from Luke Fox. There's a tiger going around. Tigers are being let loose in like some technology buildings, and they're trying to figure out why. Frankie, who has been helping Batgirl, is starting to get the itch to want to go out in the field and help, but Batgirl doesn't want to allow that. But, of course, she goes out anyway. Batgirl is also in her civilian life as Barbara Gordon, helping set up a wedding between some friends. And at the end, we get, I'm not even sure if that's a new villain or not that makes an appearance at the end, a tiger-related villain, of course, because it's tigers, not bears, and no oh my.
Oh, no.
I like the cover. I tweeted this out during the week, but I like that, like, all the different artists they have do covers for some of these, like, Batgirl and Gotham Academy books. Like, they've added David LaFuentes, I think his name is, did that cover, and then they've had, like, Bengal do a couple covers and did the annuals as well, Batgirl annual. And I forget the lady's name on Gotham Academy that's helped fill in doing some art as an Asian woman, Ming. I can look it up, but she does. She's an animator, I know, in her other job.
Her day job.
But yeah, I like the little sort of network of creators they've got going on over there, on that side of the Batman DC family.
All right. Let's see. Let me go, because I know Dirt has a couple of books he wants to talk about. Godzilla in Hell number 2. So the first book in this In Hell series was done by James Thaco, who did The Half Century War, one of my favorite Godzilla books of all time, and it's definitely lauded as one of the best miniseries that's been done for Godzilla in quite a while. The second issue in this In Hell series is done by. You gotta bear with me for a second. I got to get to the beginning, but it's done by a painter who's telling a story. Eggleton, is it Dale Eggleton? I'm trying to pull up the gentleman. Oh, it's Bob Eggleton. I'm sorry, but it's basically the next chapter in Godzilla's descent into the various levels of hell. You know, you definitely get the feeling that they're evoking, the various circles, the levels of Dante's Inferno. And, this book is beautifully painted, you know, whereas Stucco's intricate line art is eye-catching and just, you can be lost in it. This is painted Godzilla work, and I believe Eggleton has done covers for the IDW Godzilla books. But, this interior work is very, it's lushly painted. There's just a lot of great scenery in this book. Not much is happening. There are some words, here and there, that are just narration, really. And we basically get to Godzilla kind of descending into another level of hell. So that's where we find our hero or anti-hero at the end of the book. The best part of this issue is the art. It seems like maybe this is a cool concept for creators to kind of put Godzilla through these cool visuals. And at the end of the book, we have some notes, some annotations from Bob Eggleton. It's called Godzilla in Hell Inspirations, and you know he provides some sketches and thumbnails and some of his inspirations for where he takes Godzilla in the story. So it makes for a really nice package. Is it necessary reading? No, but if you're a fan of Godzilla and you can appreciate a well illustrated Godzilla book, you know, pick this up. It's actually really, really nice looking. They did not. I made the mistake of not pulling this book, so they did not have it at my local comic shop this week. I'm going to have to go to a bigger store to try to track this down because I liked the painted look. So, you know, like I said, any Godzilla fans who want to see nice painted Godzilla where he's duking it out with like demon versions of a lot of his classic enemies, pick this up. I'll also touch on Ragnarok number 6. So anyone that listens to this podcast or watches our YouTube show knows that I'm a huge fan of Walt Simonson and the Walt Simonson run on Thor. And Ragnarok is a series that Simonson is doing for IDW that also involves Thor, but obviously not the Marvel Thor, but more of a mythological, how we know, or at least how we've read Thor to be described in some of the mythology books that we've read and some of the myths that have been passed on. Basically, we have, you know, it's about Thor as a kind of like an undead who's risen after the events that have led to the demise of pretty much all the Asgardians. And, you know, Surtur is involved in this. It's just a lot of fun. And it feels like this issue, you know, we talked before about some books that weren't necessarily picking up the pace, like Cyborg. This was the issue of this limited series where the pace definitely picked up. So if you're into, you know, some Norse mythology mixed in with a little bit of sci-fi and just a lot of fun visuals from one of the true masters, Walt Simonson, pick this up, because I honestly couldn't remember what happened in the last issue, but I didn't care because I was reading this and just had a lot of fun, and that says a lot. And I think that covers all the books I read this week.
Real quick, did anybody read Hank Johnson, Agent of Hydra, or Zodiac Star Force?
No, I did want to read Hank Johnson, though. I heard that was actually pretty funny.
Yeah,
I started reading Zodiac Star Force. I didn't get all the way through it, though.
Okay. Yeah, I might have to check out the Hank Johnson, because I was skimming through it a little bit. It looks pretty amusing.
Yeah, that's one even I wanted to read. I just haven't had time yet.
Yeah.
All right, Dirt, you're up. Rapid fire.
All right, well, then... Okay, Black Tiger, number one. This is from a company called Graphic India. And if you went to Free Comic Book Day, you probably saw a copy of Chakra the Invincible. This is from the mind of Stan Lee, which, honestly, these days, I don't know if it's any more than, oh, put him in a blue suit and make him fly around. And then they just went from there and made it into a book. But this one is from Chuck Dixon and Graham Nolan, and they basically were tasked with creating a superhero in Delhi. They wanted a Southeast Asian superhero, something that would
resolve... South Asian, yeah.
Whatever. that would reflect, you know, that area and tell the story. And what they basically did is they made something that felt to me like comics from the mid to late 80s, where they're not necessarily for kids, but they are kind of in that all ages realm, mm-hmm. where there's nothing necessarily, there's violence in it, and, because it's a superhero, necessarily it leads to, fighting and whatever. But there's nothing too terribly graphic about it, but at the same time, it doesn't feel like it's made for kids, like a Teen Titans Go or something like that. Mm-hmm. But it's a meat and potatoes superhero book. It's a guy, had some rough times in his life, tried to make something of himself. This mysterious benefactor gives him this ability that comes from this strange object that fell to Earth. I mean, it's got all of those classic superhero Saturday morning cartoon type of things going on in it. And it plays itself out with a lot of exposition. And I don't know if that was necessarily, if that was some sort of editorial mandate or that's how they do, more comics that way. But there was just a lot of reading in this book. I was kind of surprised how long it took to go through it. But it's Graham Nolan artwork, so it looks good. The story is solid. And it's one of those things where, I can read it, my son can read it, but at no point does it feel like it's something that's made for kids. You know, it's just your standard superhero type book that's all ages, just because that's, you know, what comics really were supposed to be at one point in time. Mm-hmm. And that's, it's got that kind of old school mentality going for it, even though it's set in a part of the world that none of us may ever actually visit in real life. It's easy to relate to. You know, it's the struggles that everybody goes through, no matter what culture they come from. So even though it's from Graphic India, and technically I think they're based in Taiwan, but they have offices in India, and they're printing, you know, throughout those Asian countries. It's a universal story that anybody can read, anybody can follow. And like I said, it's just good meat and potatoes superhero. Nothing that blows you away. You're not, you know, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they did that in a comic. You know, nothing like that. But it's definitely, you know, you read it and you feel like I felt like I did when I was in eighth grade reading, you know, Batman books off the rack at the local bookstore. Yeah, definitely. So it just has that kind of classic feel to it, which made it pretty enjoyable for me because I'm getting pretty old and I like that stuff.
That's funny. I can sympathize.
Put him in a blue suit. And then the other book that I read this week that I really enjoyed, this is hands down, no question, my click of the week, is Hellboy in Hell number 7. This continues the story of his descent. His soul is traveling through, you know, if you want to call it the underworld, the afterlife.
Does he run into Godzilla?
No, he does not see Godzilla. apparently that's in another part of Hell Battle World. This is another one of those books where, you know, Mike Mignola only does, like, what, maybe 60 pages of artwork a year?
Right.
Like he doesn't do a lot, but when he does it, he really spends a lot of time. And this is one of those books where, you know, you get two or three pages into it, and I just realized I was stopping just staring at the artwork.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have to remind myself, no, keep reading, turn the page, like, move along here, because I just wanted to stare at it. And it's got a mixture between his standard line artwork that we all know as being the classic Hellboy stuff, but then he also does these pages that we've seen pop up from time to time where it's almost like they took his pencil sketches, his pencil layouts of the pages, and then watercolored on top of them. So it's a dreamlike state within this afterworld that he's stuck within, and we find out that his soul has actually been corrupted, and he's got to find a way to untaint his soul in order to escape. And so he's finding people he can work with down there, but at the same time, you get some of that classic Hellboy stuff where someone makes a giant monster that's, you know, 100 yards tall, that's, you know, going to crashing through the city and smashing stuff, that, and they, you know, they're saying to Hellboy, you know, just hold it off for a couple minutes. And he's like, what the hell am I supposed to do to hold off this giant monster? And that's, you know, the classic Hellboy stuff that you got from the old original stories. But the artwork is just so incredible and just so beautiful that even if I never actually, you know, read the story, complete the story, finish, you know, what the story actually is, does he make it out of hell or, you know, whatever, I'm still going to sit there and just sit down and spend a half hour just looking at the pages, just looking at the artwork.
Mm.
He's just so good at doing small little details of, you know, setting the tone and setting the mood and expressions on people's faces and just giving you that dark and gritty stuff. And at the same time, you've got that beautiful painted look too on a lot of the pages. So, you know, if I had $1 million, I'd buy a million copies of this book. It is just so fantastic.
Wow.
And it's definitely my click of the week.
There you go. There you go. And that is a clear sign that we are in click of the week territory.
Yes.
I gave you a little segue there.
Nice.
Anyone else want to offer up theirs?
I've got mine. So I was looking at my list of books, and I have a couple of sleeper candidates for click of the week. But I think the book that I enjoyed reading the most, the one that I definitely had the most effusive praise for, is Ragnarok number 6 by Walt Simonson, Lauren Martin, and John Workman. Just had a lot of fun reading this. Like I said, I barely remember what happened in the last issue. Didn't matter. This issue was so much fun to read. Obviously, I am the choir that he is preaching to. You know, he's not exactly drawing in a new fan with this book, but I enjoyed this. It's classic Simonson. My one note that I typed into the sheet before the show, or just before the show, was this is Simonson kind of getting into a nice groove. He's finally found, like, this kind of fun little groove, and he's right in, you know, he's right in that, like, kind of, you know, that sweet spot where he's just having a lot of fun telling the story and drawing the story.
My click of the week is We are Robin number 3.
Nice.
Because a Robin dies.
Oh, no.
Evil.
Just not good.
But yes, I did enjoy the book.
Oh, yeah, somebody dies. And the rest of the book was all right.
That's funny.
Well, then I guess that leaves this to me, which I don't know. It's, as I said, out of Carol Corb, but I think I am going to once again go with Lando, number 3.
All right.
So I enjoyed the reading of that book. That's and no one it. Dies.
Yeah,
oh, wait,
in the back of the tank.
Oh, that's right. Well, they don't count.
But the guards died.
The guards died.
Oh, yeah, the guards died.
They don't count. They were killed by the... Oh, we assumed the guards died. Could be the twins for all we know. I don't know.
Yeah, right. No, you mean the Black Panthers? It's Shuri and T'Challa.
Exactly.
This is part of their integration into the Marvel Universe.
That's exactly it.
They're from the Panther God planet.
Wakanda took off for a galaxy far, far away.
This is where Vibranium comes from.
I mean, that
Cloud City crash-landed in Africa, and that's
Vibranium.
And that's right. There you go. Yeah.
It all makes sense now.
Whatever that other planet was that Captain Marvel went to that one time. Which, by the way, I got a lead on that. You were talking about you didn't know the last name on that the tombstone?
Yeah, what was that?
It was Bernice Reed, who could very well be Brian Reed.
Yes, that makes sense.
Yeah, who worked on Ms. Marvel.
Yeah. That definitely makes sense. Yep, worked on Ms. Marvel before DeConnick took over.
Yeah. Well, no, this is the old, though. Yeah, this is the first volume, Ms. Marvel.
Yeah. When first, when they initially started.
Well, for those who only know that the recent Ms. Marvel.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, before she took the moniker Captain Marvel permanently.
Right. And also, we got breaking news. Viola Davis reveals she signed on to multiple DC films. And I think we pretty much know she's playing Amanda Waller. Amanda so Waller. Put that in with it, what you think, what you know.
What you know. All right, sir. I want to thank everyone for tuning in.
Wait.
Sorry.
I should have said this earlier.
Oh, the box.
The box.
Forgot. For anyone that stayed with us this whole time,
I know, right?
Podcat has got a nice surprise for us.
Well, before I get to the box, I want to just go ahead and reiterate, Black Panther, the complete collection, Volume 1, is out. If you're a Black Panther fan, it is the beginning of the Priest run. Go pick it. It's a nicely thick book, you know, so go check that out. The Volume 1, like I said, came out this week. The next volume is slated to come out December 22nd. You know, the Mark Texturio art and whoever else was working with them at the time. Maybe chopping through this. Sometime this weekend. Now, we get to the box.
The box! What's in the box?
Very, very... Marvel and...
We all know what reference that is, right?
Exactly.
What's in the box?
Marvel and Funko has this thing called a Collector's Core, which they come across. They have a box such as this. And you can see on the screen that the theme is Secret Wars this time. Last time it was Ant-Man. The other time, the first box was Avengers because the movie was out. So here is this. And in the box, we have... If you can hear me rustling. Oh, sweet. We have this pin. Well, we have two pins, actually. We have a patch right here, which is... Foul cap, and it says Marvel Collector's Core at the top. And behind it is a pin with, I'm assuming that's Iron Man.
Newer.
Yeah.
All right.
So that's that. We also have a t-shirt. Oh, that's cool. Has Secret Wars on it. And also... the good thing about it is when you start ordering the box, you pick a size, because I think there's always going to be a shirt that comes in it.
Oh, okay.
So I did that already. I'll just rip this open real quick, and hopefully this will play.
Wow.
That's kind of cool.
The Foul Cap, Miles, Iron Man, I think that's it.
And Chick-Thor.
Superior Iron Man.
Yeah, Chick-Thor. Yeah. Jane Foster.
Yeah, yep. So that is that. And we also have... Oh, well, we have this book with Jane Foster Thorne on it. I'm not sure what the heck this is. This is
it's got to be a variant of something, right?
It just says Secret Wars Collector Core Edition bonus, and there's additional edition. I'm kind of scared to open this up, but it will be opened up at some point. So,
yeah. It's probably a variant of, but you probably need to see what the you know, probably need to open up and see inside. Wait, what's the number on the bottom?
Zero. Number one. Yeah.
No, there might be a variant. Wars number one.
You know what? Screw it. Hang on, let me.
Oh, look at what we're getting. Look at this.
No. Sorry.
This is going to be Roddy Cat's corner of the show, the unboxing corner.
This saves me for one, because I damn sure didn't do the other two.
It's going to be a new... This is a preview to a new spin-off show for the Compo Chronicles.
Matt Wang asks, the bot's a $10 word.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm looking at this book.
At least Gwyneth Paltrow's head wasn't inside it. Oh, no!
Okay, this looks like this is pretty much a reprint of... Yep, Secret Wars number one.
Yeah, so it's a variant.
With a variant of cover, yeah, but it's got a couple extra pages to it. But
the original Secret Wars or this summer Secret Wars?
No, this one. Yeah, the summer one.
That would be funny if it was the original Secret Wars.
And we also have, looks like the last couple of pages after that ends is a preview of Uncanny Inhumans.
Okay.
This is a page preview, issue zero preview. Yeah. So that is that. And then, of course, there's, you know, all kind of advertisement. And the last thing we have in the book are, two Funko Pop issues. We have Jane Foster Thor.
Wow.
And we have Miles Morales.
That's cool.
I want that.
That's cool.
So we'll get the box, Tim.
Cool.
And as far as I know, I think they said that these pops may be limited. Well, I don't know if they said limited edition, but these may be
exclusive on the
right. But I mean, for how long though? Is what I'm saying. Exactly. Are they going to do another run for this, or these are strictly exclusive for this thing? Which I thought
that would be pretty remarkable for the Miles Morales, Funko Pop. I don't know if there's been a Miles Pop figure yet. There must have been at this point, no?
I don't, that I know of, and they keep talking about different ones that are coming out. Like, they got bunches and bunches coming out. And on the back, they usually have all the ones that are in the particular runs, and these two are the only ones on the back, so we can almost safely say that these probably are going to be two. These are exclusive to the box, but I can't say that for certain.
Although, sometimes what they do is they make them an exclusive pose, not that it's an exclusive character.
That is also, yeah.
So they might do it again sometime when he's got, like, the little flip hand at the end or something.
Yeah, because I can't imagine them not just doing these as a regular run somewhere down the line, or you're an already have this out. This is just, like you said, it could be just this in this pose. So there we go. Right. That is the box. And I'm going to have to clip this out some kind of way. But there you go. But yeah, as you can see from what Doug has up, it says, the August box closed. And I know they also go to cons, so you will probably find them at New York. And I know they usually have a bunches of boxes because they did at Comic-Con and whatnot, so you can just get this box here or go back and get all the other ones, I think, still be able to get. Hmm?
Is there anything printed on the inside of the box?
No, there's the only
one thing.
Loot
Crate makes it so a lot of the boxes you turn inside out or cut them in some way to make them into a display piece that goes with the stuff that came in it.
So, yeah, you might not be able to see it, but there's a bunch of artwork that's from Secret Wars. So I don't know. Let me see if I can get a good... If this is going to play for you guys.
Oh, yeah. Definitely see that.
So that's the lid, and some of it looks like it came out of the book, out of Secret Wars number one.
That's cool.
Rip Strange, and then here's the
inside. I still don't know what I guess the draw is the exclusivity of these boxes, so, and the collectability of the things that come in them, like from Loot Crate and stuff, so.
Right, presumably this stuff you're not going to be able to get in many places else.
And this is an exclusive deal with Funko, which means there's always going to be a Funko Pop Vinyl or Mystery Mini that's exclusive to the box that's in there. So if you collect Pop Vinyls, then it's one of those things that you're going to want to get.
Yep. So there you go. And that is the box for this quarter, because there are four a year, so there's only one more coming up.
So what's this called? It's not Loot Crate.
It's Collector's Core.
Marvel Collector Core.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Is that like you get that with your Marvel Unlimited subscription?
No, this is a separate thing. Like, okay. This is just them doing this with Funko Pop.
It's separate thing. $25 per box plus
shipping. Right. And this, like, I can't remember what the...
So anyone can sign up?
Yeah. Yep. Like, there's 25 per box, but you can get all four for whatever it is. I can't remember what it is, but it's probably obviously around 150.
If you get the recurring 12-month program, you get 6 boxes every year.
Wow.
And a free annual gift for $150.
Which I think I did that. So we'll see what happens there.
Nice. I like it.
It's cool right. If you're a pop collector.
I could deal with like 4 times a year. I could deal with that. Loot page too often every month.
Yeah, and that Comic-Con box and all these other boxes they've got that do go every month.
That's just too much jump to start piling up around the house.
Yeah, I was going to say, on top of whatever it is you're buying weekly, you know, you happen to go to the store. So, that's tough. I kind of like that quarterly, you know, like once every 4 months or 3 months. So.
Yeah, it seemed like they put a little bit of thought into it.
Cool.
All righty.
As they say, is that.
Good job, Roddy.
I want to thank everyone for tuning in tonight's episode of Comic Book Chronicles. Follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDOGG98 and at CBCron. Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need.
New comic book shop.
Agent 70 is at Agent_70. And Dirt is at PCN_Dirt and PopCultureNetwork.com. We have some exciting episodes coming up in the next couple of weeks. We'll have our very special guest, which we'll be promoting on social media starting next week. And then the week following after that, some more guests.
Yeah.
And in the future, more guests. Because, hey, why not?
If you want to be a guest, come holler at us. At CBCron, hashtag Comic Book Chronicles, hashtag CBCron. Get it, any of us.
Let's do some networking.
ClickNation.com, that's right.
Yeah.
Yep. And with that, we are the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Yay!